Hello, my name is Michelle Yana-Chan, the Wandering Book Collector, and this is my podcast, conversations with writers exploring what's informed their books and their lives around themes of movement, memory, sense of place, borders, identity, belonging, and home. And a quick side, if you like the podcast, please take a moment to rate us on the app you use to tune in. We want our guests to be read more and heard more, and strong ratings help make that happen. Thank you. I'm joined by the writer Ayobami Adebayo to discuss her book, A Spell of Good Things, on the Booker Long List this year. It follows her debut novel, Stay With Me. Ayobami, welcome to the Wandering Book Collector.
Thank you. So great to be here.
Both your books, Ayobami, are set in Nigeria, and that's where I find you now. Whereabouts are you in the country at the moment?
In Lagos. Which is where I was born, although I didn't grow up in Lagos, but I'm in Lagos at the moment.
And is that home for you, Ayobami? Is that what you call home?
Yes, it's one of the places that I call home. So I do, I have a home in Lagos and spend about half of the year here right now. I think up until 2022, up until the beginning of last year, I was spending most of my time in Lagos. So Lagos is one of the places that I call home. Also now Norwich in the UK is one of the places I call home, spend half of the year there. So home is multiple now.
That is quite a contrast, Norwich and Lagos, I would say.
An absolute contrast. And perhaps for me, the sort of the best of both worlds, because as I mentioned earlier, I didn't grow up in Lagos. I grew up in a city called Ilefe. Mostly grew up in Ilefe, and it's a university town. It's quiet. I love it, and I think I still miss it. In Norwich, I have that quieter version of, you know, it's not London, or Manchester or Birmingham. It's just nice and quiet and peaceful, and when I come back to Nigeria, I get to do Lagos with all the bustle and all the excitement.
And now that you split your time, Ayobami, between two places, does that make the way that you see your country different with a fresh lens?
Yes, absolutely. That interactions now are somehow in my mind, I'm processing them differently, contrasting them. I think that I am perhaps recognizing more, perhaps more than I was even able to before, things that I can say are distinctively Nigerian. So yes, I think that's the case, Michelle.
And is that distance useful when writing about your homeland? Because of course your two books are set in Nigeria.
I think that it is for different reasons. My second book, for instance, I began writing it when I was on studying for my MA in creative writing in the University of East Anglia in the UK. And there were bits of it, there are chapters in it when I, you know, read it now. I remember when I was first conceiving of them. And part of the conception was an act of nostalgia, you know, that I was pulling, you know, items and food and even books from Nigeria that had been back to part of my childhood in Nigeria. And so distance can be useful, you know, in various ways, just as proximity, you know, also has its uses. Because after that MA, I did come back to Nigeria, you know, some of the places I was writing about, lived in some of those neighborhoods again for a while as I continue to write the book.
Well, let's turn to A Spell of Good Things, Ayobami. The novel focuses on two people. There's Eniola, a teenager from a poor family who can't afford to send their son to school And to him, it feels like his future is narrowing. And then there's Wuraola. She's an overworked young doctor from a privileged background and at the start of a promising career, although she's exhausted by the hours of a depleted hospital system. And Wuraola is in a relationship with a man that makes her family and his family very pleased in a political alliance sort of way. And these two characters, Anyolia and Wuraola, come from very different strata in Nigerian society, but their lives become entangled by politics and an upcoming local election. While the book speaks to a kind of fluidity that allows for the pair's encounter, it grapples with the sharp divisions in society too. Were you ever fearful, Ayobami, when writing this book, of feeding the cliches or of creating caricatures which could show at times the worst aspects of Nigerian society?
I think that I wasn't really. I wasn't afraid of that because I think that when I'm working, I'm really interested and focused on character, and that my conception of my fiction is probably more character driven, so that I know that what I'm trying to write is a particular person with the main characters and not a type. And with this book in particular, I feel like there was enough going on that was complicating any narrative, any prevailing narrative about well, this is the way things are in this place. Say, for instance, Wuraola, who's working in a hospital that has depleted resources. What I was writing about in thinking about that situation, which is the reality, which is something that I wanted to highlight. Part of what I was thinking about was I wanted to highlight also the generosity, and the resilience of the people who are working under these conditions and are still have such concern for the patient, even sometimes at the risk of their own life. And that's where I think in many instances, cliches fail, or a single story will fail because it stops at the surface. And when working in and with fiction, going beneath the surface always has layers of complexity and nuance that you find in human life. Things are really never as simple as they seem, and that space of complexity and even ambiguity is one that I'm interested in as a writer.
Well, I mean, the portraits of the people in your books, I call them people in your books rather than characters, Ayobami, they really stick. And you do avoid it deftly, I should add, through these very rounded, very solid, and very real people that your work's known for. How do these characters arise for you? Are they quite fully formed before you even put pen to paper?
Thank you so much for your kind words, Michelle. It's always good to hear that, come back to me, because I do think about them as people. They're not fully formed when I start, but there's usually, if I think about the two books that have published, there's usually a character that sort of commands my attention, and I just become interested in this person's life and what it's like to move through the world as this particular person. With the Spell of Good Things, he was Eniola, who in many ways for me is at the heart of the book. There's several perspectives, but this young boy is the person that sort of came to me. It was the one that I started thinking about. And it wasn't fully formed, And I just stuck with him for about his limitations, about his blind spots, and then began, about his world, began to write that character. The first chapter, the first full chapter with him, I remember one of the things I did when I was working on the book was to write a day in his life, just start with when he wakes up and go all the way to when he goes back to bed, just to get a sense of who is this young boy, how does he move through the world? How does he see himself? How does he think that other people see him? How does that influence his decision? So I did that exercise, and I mean, most of it does not even make it into the novel about, but that's just to give you an insight into how I get a sense of a character, and then I sort of follow them through their life and get to know them better, as a result.
You highlight, but also you blur the boundaries between rich and poor and the privilege and the poverty and the educated and those longing for but missing out on schooling. Yet you also show how fear and loss and grief are universal. Is that comforting that these universal emotions are such a great leveler? That they offer, for a writer particularly, a scope to create connections between people who would otherwise rarely come into contact.
I think it's a bit of is it a comfort? I don't know that it is. I think that it is, yeah, I guess in some way it could be a comfort. It is, I hope that it is read. Partly, at least in Nigeria, one of the ways that I hope it's read is also as a cautionary tale, as a reminder, because I do think that, once the walls go up, or people have the walls, they're in their spaces, they have their security, and they have wealth as an insulator, it's easy to forget those levelers, So I guess one of the reasons that I was thinking about it, is as a reminder, of, I guess, a collective destiny of some kind, a shared fate of some kind, by virtue of existing in the same society, a shared participation in the consequences of how that society is organized, regardless of where on the ladder, that power and wealth does not necessarily insulate. So, like you said, there are those sharp deviations that I wanted to highlight. And then, also, as you happily said, blur and have this kind of fluidity within the text that shows how these lives actually enter into each other in ways that might not even be visible to the individuals themselves.
What your books also left me with, Ayobami, circles around the fragility of life, of how things can change in a moment. For example, the impact of a father losing his job, or the impact of someone losing their temper and striking someone. And it's devastating to read the chain reaction that comes about from these, seemingly isolated one-off incidents. Is it as hard for you to write these tortuous, profoundly tortuous events as they unfold as it is for us, for me to read them?
Oh my God. I'll just, I think yeah, absolutely, it is, it is. I was laughing because, I remember with my first novel, there were bits of it that were difficult, and people would come up to me and talk about this. And one of the things I used to say was that when I was writing that part of that book, I would work during the day, right? And by evening, I would be feeling so disturbed, that I would just leave the house and walk sometimes for an hour, just keep walking and walking and walking, to sort of get out of my own head. So it is, it's not gratuitous in any way, for me. It feels, I only really go there where I feel it is necessary, to show. And, there's something I say that there are, in the world, there's several small forgotten tragedies, that happen. And I'm always interested in the people who can't afford to forget that random news item in the papers. And with this book, that's one of the things I was thinking through. The job loss for your last father, that was a policy decision that was made in the early 2000s in the part of Nigeria that I grew up in. And today most people have forgotten about it, that happened, but the families whose trajectories were changed totally by that. And I often, as a person, I'm interested in going back to those moments and sitting with them and drawing them out and sort of following and tracing them and seeing how things play out and unfold. And then the other thing, for instance, some of the things that happen later in the book, I don't want to give spoilers, but when I figured them out, there was one in particular that I couldn't even come back to writing for about 3 months, because I was one trying to think, is there a honest way around this? Is there a way around this that I feel is honest to the book and honest to the society that I'm writing about? And then when I realized, well, this is the way, this is where this is going, it was just difficult. It is difficult to write because I get really close to my characters, when I'm working on a book. And so it is, it is difficult to write and to go to those places with them. The Wuraola, is in this messy relationship, to put it lightly. And one of the things that had happened when I started writing the book was that I did not write from a perspective at all, and was sort of relaying what was happening through other people. And at some point, I had to ask myself, well, when this is not working, why am I sort of avoiding a perspective? And it was also because I really did not want to go into that person's mind as they're going through this difficult situation. So that's a very long way to say yes.
I think I might have to go on some walks after I read your work. That's going to be my top tip, my takeaway. Without also wanting to give anything away, I closed this book after reading the last page, feeling quite devoid of hope, I would say. Is that the truth of it? Is that your point, that the injustices will forever exist?
I hope not. with this book, I think that I can, I mean, absolutely agree with you that there are people for whom the way society, the way the world is organized right now, that is their reality. That there is no hope that the world is offering to them, that society is offering to them, that the powerful are making possible for them. And I really wanted to stay with that. Because, we talked earlier about the levelers and the commonalities. And you've read it. So one of the things that happens at the end, with sort of the tragic outcome, is that one family is able to have closure and one does not. That even in the so-called leveler, there's this distinction in who has access and power and who can place a phone call to a particular person and get answers. And for people who the injustices have been so piled upon each other that not only do they not have that kind of access, not only do they not have closure, part of the argument that I think the book is making is that the whole society also loses out, on what could have been genius, in this instance. So I personally like to think I try to be hopeful, but sometimes one of the ways that I've talked about this book is that I hope that it's also read as a cautionary tale of consequence, and that sometimes it really does feel like that. And I think that in many societies, people can think about, when you look at the world, you can think about specifics, families who have been devastated, by realities of oppressions. But when I look at Nigeria, one of the sad things that has happened since for me since this book was published is that, every single eventuality has happened in reality, say in the past 3 months, just looking at the news, almost in instances, almost in identical manner. For instance, the way that the health system is so lacking in resources and underfunded, and the consequence that that can have, not just for patients, but for professionals working in that space. There was a case, recently in Nigeria, at least two or three young doctors who ended up in similar situations. So, yeah, sometimes it feels like that, but personally, I am hopeful. But I feel like sometimes enough hope is not. I think hope needs to be active in some kind of way, at a society, at the level of society and organization. And sometimes we need to look the truth dead in the eye to have a jolt that puts hope into action, if that makes any sense.
Did you grow up, Ayobami, with this kind of multi-layered awareness of what was around you? Or did that kind of hit you at some point? Was there a seminal moment or moments later in life?
I think it's a bit of both. I'll explain why. My family is, I guess you could say, firmly middle class. So I didn't grow up with the immediate, realities of grinding poverty, I would say. But, my mom, for instance, didn't come from money. So she still has relatives that visits and you see their neighborhood and all of that. But I think that it didn't really strike me as a determining reality, and I think that's one of the things that this book is grappling with, not just as a reality, but as a reality that can sh shape and shift the directions of the lives of young people, what is even possible to them. It's, how it can be a ceiling of some kind. Until later in life, when, I mean, there was a moment that was striking that is directly connected to this book. But, when I got into university and I had gone, to a private school, partly because the public school system was so totally underfunded. I remember my first year, I'd been enrolled in a public school, my first year of secondary school. And after the first term, my family just took me out of there. And I was, in my family, the first person who would go to a private school. So there was a time, when my parents were going to school, the public school system was well funded. People could go there and have a chance, but I had gone to a private school. We ended up in university and had classmates or meeting people who had gone to public schools. And quite a number of them, even though they're gotten into what at the time was one of the best, public universities in Nigeria. And in interacting closely with a number of them, I realized that it wasn't even a factor of intellectual capacity. It was just that there were things that they weren't taught in secondary school that they then had to start learning because university was placing a demand on them. And that, I think, was when I really started to think about, I guess, the advantages that my own privilege and experiences had given to me, and how for several people that was not even possible at all. That was not an option for several people, in Nigeria in particular. So it was a bit of both. I had an awareness, relatives who weren't as well up, or even as weren't like middle class, at least you can pay your bills and you don't, nobody's chasing you out of the house. But it was really until, as I was getting older and older, that I started seeing, how this kind of organizations kind of grinding poverty that is perpetuated can be so limiting and be such a ceiling and be so devastating over the course of people's lives.
Given your readership is global, did you ever concern yourself with with fallout that you might get in Nigeria from presenting your culture, by some might say perpetuating the prejudiced Western optics on Africa, particularly when it comes to corruption and politics? Or is that just too much to think about when you've got a book to write? I mean, it's a hell of a task in itself.
I think that with my book, I am speaking to Nigeria. I'm speaking to Nigeria, and this is a bit, I don't know. I do think that I'm articulating something that my generation is grappling with, my generation of young Nigerians. So I was thinking about that, but I wasn't thinking about it in terms of what the West thinks, because frankly, I really don't think it's that consequential. It has consequences. But for me, what is consequential is how Nigerians think about Nigeria, how Nigerians, organize, for the country, how the Nigerian government treats the Nigerian people and interacts with the Nigerian people. And so I was thinking about it, but what I was thinking about was how to, I guess, in some way hold up a mirror, because it the audience, like you said, is very global. But I do think, and I do know this, that a lot of Nigerians do read my work, and respond to it. And I think in there are circles in which it has drives conversation, around things. I'll illustrate with a story about my first novel. I think that with that one, that was when I had that anxiety with the first book, because I'd never published before. I really didn't have a sense of how things might be interpreted or contextualized. So there were things I was writing about Nigerian community that I was anxious about. Are people going to read this and think, oh, Nigerians are like this? But it was, a conversation that, again, it was important for me to have with my people. And it was, it's a book about infertility and how, people interact with women who haven't had children. And I cannot tell countless times, almost every event I will do in Nigeria, somebody will walk up to me and say, I read this book and I started thinking about this differently. I read this book, the one that was surprising to me and amazing to me was several young people who walked up to me and said, I read this book, I gave it to my mom. And then my mom sat me down the next day and told me about some of the things she had experienced before she gave birth to me. And I didn't even know, that she had any of these experiences. And so those are the things that I'm thinking about, how my work can make some of those conversations possible, in within Nigerian communities, in Nigeria and abroad. And then, there's that second question of, is this going to feed into a narrative? I really don't have that much anxiety about that anymore because I think that there's a lot of Nigerian writing that is coming out that is concerning itself with different aspects of Nigerian life. There are Nigerian writers publishing all kinds of books, that are not concerned with what my work is concerned with, that feel like there's a balance of stories that is possible. In terms of people reading work in context, and that if someone wants to hold a particular perspective, I don't think it's necessarily on me anymore because there's so many narratives out there. And there's a story I heard, I think it was, I might be misremembering, but I think it was Chimamanda Adichie who said it once. I think it was in a reading she went. How someone had come up to her after Popol Hibiscus was published. And Popol Hibiscus is about this, there's this father at the heart of it who's abusive. And said to her, isn't it such a shame that Nigerian men are this way? And I think she had just read American Psycho just before then. And she just said, isn't it such a shame that American men are all like this dude in American Psycho? So yeah, I think that I really don't, Yeah, I thought that was hilarious. And yeah, it's an answer I've sort of saved in a file somewhere in my mind.
It's a perfect riposte. Given what you just said, Ayobami, could I then say to you that there's a level of activism in your fiction?
I guess so. I guess so. I don't. Yeah, somehow there is. I think I have to admit to that now. Because when I was thinking of myself, becoming a writer, I didn't think of it in that way, but somehow I've written two books and here we are. I guess they're just things that I'm really concerned about, and they find their way into my fiction somehow. Even when I say to myself, what the next one is just going to be, two people on an island, there's nothing political in it. But I think so. I think it's also that as a reader, I'm very interested in Nigerian history and politics. Nigeriana is my one of my favorite reading categories. And I guess because I take in so much about that, it feeds into my imagination. Yeah, I wouldn't. Yeah, I mean, I guess my friends from school would not think of me as an activist in any way, but well.
Ayobami, I read your books in reverse to the order that you wrote them in. So Stay With Me is my most recent read, and this book, also set in Nigeria, has a strong focus on marriage and motherhood. The couple, Akin and Yejidi, have been married for 5 years and don't have children yet. And I say yet because so much pressure is put on this couple. So much so that Akin takes a second wife to try to sort out this matter of childlessness, even though neither of them want that. So something else your books raise is around expectation, particularly cultural and parental expectation, career or marriage or motherhood. It's really acute in both your books. And perhaps, although I don't want to get into you categorizing me as the woman who asked Chimamanda about her. American Psycho coming back to her. But generally speaking, you might suggest that in Nigerian culture, the pressures on some of these elements of life might be more than in, say, the culture of the UK where you live. So is therefore is that the setting of Nigeria where your writing is most comfortable, and would you look at writing a book set somewhere else? This island with these two people and no politics.
I think that, like I said, I'm doing some re-recognition, of Nigeria. And I think that there's something that gives birth to that pressure. And it's, I think, a more communal oriented conception, I guess, of life and being in the world. There's that sense in which you feel a sense of interconnection and obligations to one another. It has its advantages. It can, have its and that's, some of the things like you mentioned that my work is thinking through. It can have its cruel manifestations. There can be a lot of cruelty that is exerted as a result. Because, if I'm thinking about, see, to illustrate with something in both books, even the sense of responsibility for one another within a family that many people are brought up in with and is sort of expected, of you in the way the societies were are organized and even now, and in some instances were organized pre-colonialism. In A Spell of Good Things, there's this chapter where the sisters all show up. One sister is having a birthday, and all the sisters show up with, all kinds of things to contribute to the celebration. That's, where I come from in Nigeria, that's a cultural thing. That when one part of the family is having a celebration, has something to do, there are specific, like this number of wraps of pandili, and this their cousins have to bring this. This other part of this other people who are also related to them have to bring this. And people sort of already know, so once they hear about it, it's a responsibility. And when it's your own turn, you sort of can't count on everybody pulling together the resources. So it can be a safety net, in some way for individuals that say people who, for instance, maybe lose their parents when they're young, there would usually be someone in the family who takes them in and takes responsibility for them. Of course, they're obviously always exceptions. So it has, that, but it has its limits. It has several points where it crosses over, into cruelty and people having wanting to control, the lives of other people and the expectations. The weight of that expectation is it can be a lot. It can and it and it, it and I think that it does shape, has shaped many Nigerians, shapes many people's choices, what career they're going to, go into. I mean, I'll illustrate with a story about myself. When I was in secondary school, there's a point in Nigeria where you write an exam and they sort of sort you into what they used to call, I don't know what they call them now, the science class, the social science class. What they used to do is that the students who scored the highest would go into the science class. And then, it sort of goes in descending order. And what would happen is that parents will come to school and request that their children will be taken from the arts or the social sciences into the science class because, many people wanted their children to become doctors or engineers. And, when that happened in my own class and I was sorted into the science class, I went to the staff room and told them I wanted to leave, that, I wanted to go to the arts class. because at that time I was going to study theatre arts and write plays. You know, that's what I thought I was going to do. And there was, first of all, this opera, like, what do you mean? This usually works the other way. We're not going to do that. And then, you know, one of the teachers asked me, okay, well, what do you want to study? And I guess he was expecting me to say I was going to study law, and they would have said, okay, yeah, you can be a lawyer. And I said, you know, I want to study theatre arts. And there was a greater uproar about what? And they said, no, we're not going to do that. You have to go and bring your mom before we allow you to change that. And so I had to come to school with my mom, who said, yeah, it's fine, let her do what she wants. But, you know, encoded in that interaction is the assumption, one, that my mom was going to want to determine what I wanted to do, that, and that she was going to force her own decision on me, you know. And so, as early as that, many people's trajectories, you know, are shit, you know. It used to be a story in I guess some of my own circles of people who studied medicine and once they graduated, framed the certificate and gave it to their parents. You sort of like, well, you wanted me to do this and this and this, and you can keep the certificate. And now I'm going to go do what I want to do. So yeah, I think that it's definitely the case. It's a very long-winded answer.
Ayobami, can you tell us anything about what you're working on now?
Ah, it's two people on
No
an
politics, no, nothing on gender, nothing on class struggle, nothing on corporate.
island. Everybody's happy and everything is well.
Sounds like it's going to be a rip-roaring success.
Yes. I think that's my goal for the next book, really. Everyone's
Wow,
happy.
are you serious? I was being facetious then. So are you collecting material?
I've started doing a bit of writing. Yeah, but really, one of my goals for it is that everyone's happy in the end.
Wow.
Because I want to be happy.
This is like, with Picasso's blue period, this is your happy period.
Yes.
Right. Okay, well, maybe
Yeah.
I won't have to go for a walk after your next book. I can just
No, you won't.
follow on the sofa and just be happy. Ayobami Adebayo, thank you for joining me on the Wandering Book Collector.
Thank you so much.